We're joined now by Jason Molloy, professor of political science at the University of Louisiana Lafayette and the author of Smarter Ballots, Electoral Realism and Reform. Your number is 877-217-5757. And Jason is an expert on elections. And in Louisiana, we have a system that is largely unique, because we have an open primary in which all the candidates, regardless of party, are thrown together. And then if nobody gets more than 50% plus one vote, there is a runoff between either a Republican and a Democrat, or two Republicans, two Democrats, or candidates who are unaffiliated. But that's the way we've been doing things since 1975 statewide. There was one brief period in 2008 when we went to close primaries for the congressional cycle. But largely for the last 45 years, this is the way it's been in Louisiana. And Jason Molloy, your thoughts about where we are as a state and the conjecture that there might be a move to change the way we do our elections.
Well, thanks, Jim. And everyone knows, especially down here, that Louisiana is not exactly like every other state. But some of the differences are for the good and others for the bad. In some respects, the primary system that we have, the legislative language is the common ballot. Sometimes folks call it the jungle or the jumbo primary. That system actually produces a significant difference in turnout. If you look at other states, even nearby states such as Texas or Florida or Alabama, that use partisan primaries, that use a different system. And what I mean is not the turnout in the general election, but actually the turnout in the first round of voting is much higher in Louisiana. And I think that may be something to do with the fact that all voters see the exact same list of candidates on that first voting day, and it's the same for everyone. We're not subdivided into different partisan groups.
Well, in Louisiana, we have a situation now in which quite often Republicans dominate statewide, of course. That's a given, but there are aberrations, and one is for the highest office in the state, and John Bel Edwards. If he had been in a close primary situation, he would have had a different race probably in 2015, and he might not have drawn David Vitter as his opponent. And if that were the case, he might not be governor. So is this current system helping or hurting one side or the other more?
Well, generally, the more open your primary system is, the wider the range of voters that are brought to bear on that first decision. And bear in mind that we're talking about kind of a two-step process in our elections, and the first vote is really narrowing the list for the second vote, and that's true of any state that holds primaries. But what's different about Louisiana's primaries is, for example, in 2019, the most recent governor's race, 46% of voters came out in the first vote, and 51% in the second vote. So it was an off-year election. There were no federal races on the ballot. Many people say 51% isn't very high for the general election. But that differential is what's interesting and is so different. If you look at other states, even when they have other states that have governor's races in federal election years, such as 2018, they have a much lower turnout on the first ballot. And so what that means generally is that you're going to get more voters than only the most intense party activists selecting the nominees to end up on the final ballot. So the general expectation is you're going to get more bipartisan-oriented, moderate, centrist candidates the more open your primaries are. Now, there are other factors in any given race. Funny things can happen. Primaries.
Go ahead. Partisan primaries.
Generally, partisan primaries tend to favor candidates who play more to the narrow slice of their party's base that will actually turn out to vote in that first round.
And there are exceptions, most notably David Duke and Edwin Edwards in 1991. If it were a closed primary, it's possible neither one of them would have been their party's choice, but they survived because of the open primary, and they ended up in a runoff, and it was the race that was marqueed as the race from hell. Now,
right.
Now in Louisiana, Democrats still outnumber Republicans, in Louisiana, black Democrats outnumber white Democrats, I think by about 250,000, somewhere around that number. So if we had a closed primary, it would be very difficult for a white Democrat to be the nominee of his or her party. Would that in any way affect the electoral situation? Because it would seem that we would almost always have a black Democrat running against a white Republican.
That's a possibility. You know, the exceptional cases that we like to talk about, we have to try to look past those when we're talking about electoral reform. And so, you know, your question is reaching more toward what's likely to be the norm rather than exception, and quite possibly the 1991 race that you mentioned and the 2015 and 2019 races may prove to be exceptional. I don't know enough about the internal dynamics of the Democratic Party in Louisiana, or let me say that I'm not trying to make a prediction about internal party dynamics. But the universal trend, regardless of which state you're looking at, in different states use different primary systems, the overall trend is that the smaller primary electorate in a partisan primary in states outside Louisiana is going to pick different kinds of candidates. And it may not come down to the race of the candidate, but it may come down as well to policy positions. You would expect more strident, more extreme policy positions from candidates who come out of closed party primaries.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. A few more minutes with Jason Malloy. His book is Smarter Ballots, Electoral Realism and Reform. And Jason is a professor of political science at UL Lafayette. And a listener, Tracy at the Capitol, asks about the Electoral College. Some of us believe it's long overdue for change, and we've had two of the last five elections decided the wrong way when it comes to who won the vote and who won in the Electoral College. How long can America stomach this kind of an environment?
Well, America's stomached a number of these cases of a discrepancy between the Electoral College winner and the popular vote winner. And so, you know, it might have surprised people in 1876 when it happened for the first time that it could happen, you know, two or three more times and still not get changed. But one thing about the Electoral College is that people often overlook is it's up to the states. Each state can decide how they're going to allot their electors in the Electoral College. And the winner-take-all rule, meaning if you win one state, you get every single elector that state has to offer. That's not written in stone.
We're going to spend a bit more time with Jason Malloy, and we'll also hear from two representatives of Together Baton Rouge back after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and in short order, we will hear from Jennifer Carwell and Abel Thompson from Together Baton Rouge, but we're wrapping it up with Jason Malloy, professor of political science at UL Lafayette. His book is Smarter Ballots. Ann on Jefferson has been waiting patiently. Ann, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I would like Mr. Malloy to speak to the independent voter in the closed primary system, and I'll just hang up and listen.
Does the independent voter have more or less clout when it comes to closed primaries as opposed to open ones?
Less clout for sure. And one of the main purposes of closed party primaries sometimes is to give declared partisans more influence over what I was talking about, narrowing down that list of candidates for the general election. Now, different states have different rules about when independent voters can jump into one party's primary or another. But the simplest, both administratively and, you know, in terms of valuing the vote of independents, the simplest system is what Louisiana already has.
We're 104 days away from the presidential election, and a listener asked about the Alabama race last night. Tommy Tuberville, the former Auburn coach, is now in a runoff. He'll be paired as the Republican nominee against Democrat incumbent Doug Jones in the general election, 104 days away. Tuberville defeated Jeff Sessions, the former U.S. senator who was trying to get his old job back, and the listener, Holly in the Garden District, asked, would this race have been different in an open primary? And we'll never know, but it might very well have turned, this one might have turned out just as it did with the two people who are going to be running against one another, facing each other in the general election.
Well, that's a very good question, and as you say, it's speculation. But one possibility is that in an open primary, especially Louisiana's extreme open version, possibly independent voters might have wanted to weigh in with the Republican candidate that they expected to do better in the general election, a more moderate candidate. And some people say that might have been Sessions over Tuberville. Sessions might have done a little bit better, potentially, if he was perceived as more moderate in the national scene.
Another listener notes that in a closed primary system that pluralities win. In November, for example, if there would be a third-party candidate on the ballot, a plurality would win, and you could have this weird situation. For example, David Duke almost ran first in the primary of 1991. In a closed primary system, he might very well have been elected governor and U.S. senator in Louisiana.
Yeah, that makes a dilemma and a trade-off for people who advocate closed partisan primaries, because if you can always hold a runoff from both the primary and the general election to try to get a majority winner. But if you do that, then you end up with four rounds of voting. So it's kind of a trade-off. If you, do you want to take the risk of having a plurality winner without running primaries? Runoffs, or do you want to essentially double the rounds of voting that it takes to fill a seat?
Well, Jason Malloy, hopefully you'll talk again soon. The book is Smarter Ballots, professor of political science at UL Lafayette. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim.
And in studio, Jennifer Carwile and Abel Thompson, they are with Together Baton Rouge, and they are here to talk about the Civil Service Board and representation on that board. And let's begin with you, Abel. You believe that there's some concern here. Why?
Yes. And really, I want to pass it on to Jennifer so she can give a little bit of background of the Civil Service Board. She has been sitting in the meetings for the last 2 years, so she can give a little more background about the Civil Service Board.
So, yeah, Jim, one of the reasons I started going to those board meetings was we got involved with sort of criminal justice issues after Alton Sterling was shot. And as we were investigating what is the accountability, we realized when there are disciplinary issues or terminations in the police department, then those hearings go in front of the civil service boards. We wanted to see how that worked. One of the things that has brought up concern is the person who's sitting as the president of the board, who is from the nominee from the Baton Rouge Police Department, has some serious civil rights violations in his record. And we feel like when it comes to people who are going to be overseeing these kind of hearings, mm-hmm. we need to have the best, people with records that well, show that's exemplary.
Well, how would you change it then?
Well, yeah, there are no standards. So, I'm sorry. So we would change it by having some standards set up so that, for example, if you have been found guilty of a civil rights violation, you would not be eligible to put your name in to be on this board.
How many members are there?
There are five members. It is one nominee from LSU, one from Southern, one from the municipality, meaning, Metro Council and the mayor's office, one from the police department, and one from the fire department. So some of the things that we're thinking about are standards as far as, having an exemplary record. Also, it seems like in the past, the board was fairly heavily weighted with pro-union folks. And if you look at the law, the point of the board is for public, to serve the public interest. So it seems like it should be neutral. It shouldn't be the police chief's girlfriend. It shouldn't be the union leader's wife. It should be neutral folks who are not affiliated.
Who makes the appointments?
So LSU, Southern, and the mayor's office put nominees up to the Metro Council, and then the Metro Council votes on those.
And what about BRPD and the fire department?
The fire department and the BRPD take nominations, and then they vote. So their voting period is happening at the end of this week. They had nominations were due, I think, at the end of last week.
Yes.
And they are voting at the end of this week.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to get in under the wire with Jennifer Carwile and Abel Thompson, they're with Together Baton Rouge, and they're finding fault on the Civil Service Board, at least with how the members are chosen. One from LSU, one from Southern, one from the Metropolitan. Is it from the Metro Council?
Well, it says in the law, it says municipality. So from what we've experienced so far, the mayor puts up two nominees, and then the Metro Council votes.
All right. Then BRPD and the fire department, and it's been this way for a while, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So do you find fault with some of the decisions that have been made?
Well, you know, Jim, when I was sitting in, I sat for, like I said, the past 2 years and watching in the past, there were some more pro-union folks on the board, the LSU person and the Metro Council person both had affiliations with the union. So watching those, it seemed like they were a little bit more forgiving of things that the general public would have said, hey, that's a problem. I don't know how specific I should be getting, but I can.
I think what we're dealing with is and what they put BRPD's position on this board right now is exemplary of a broken system of accountability. And that's what we are addressing at this point in time when we address the board, is that reforms have been made for mm-hmm. the way we police our communities, mm-hmm. But they cannot really take effect until a system of accountability is strong. So at this point in time, we're asking the police department to choose a candidate for this board that has the that will act in the interest of the public and hold his fellow officers accountable. And we also want to educate the public about the existence of this board, because we cannot expect a board to act in the interest of the public if the public is not aware of their existence.
Well, there are five members, and you seem to be pointing to the BRPD representative as a source of concern. What about the other four?
Well, like I said, right now, the other four, the fire department's person is also up for renewal this year. So we're not and we're not as concerned with that, because the person who had been sitting on the board did not have a record that brought up red flags.
And you mentioned the Alton Sterling case. Is there something regarding that case that you feel was handled inappropriately?
Well, I'll tell you what, looking at how that case, Officer Salamone and Officer Lake were supposed to come in front of that board. They were appealing mm-hmm. their decisions. And it was interesting, because when we had the pro-union folks, that was going forward. When those people rolled off and new people were put on, I noticed that, when it was time for Officer Lake's appeal hearing, they stepped away. And so that leads me to believe that when they knew it was pro-union, when they knew it was going to be a pro-officer decision, they were gung-ho. When they knew it was going to be neutral, they stepped away. I don't know that there's it appeared to me that there mm-hmm. was a causal relationship there.
In Lake's case, many believe that he acted appropriately. Mm-hmm. Salamone, a whole different story.
Right.
Most people believe that he acted inappropriately and may have committed murder.
Right.
But that case, of course, is still grinding on in the civil courts. He's got a good lawyer in Steve Carlton, but who will prevail? Do you think justice will prevail in this case?
Well, we're just focused on the Municipal Police and Fire Board at this moment, and they have removed their cases from in front of that board. So justice, I hope so. I hope so for the families, for Alton Sterling's family.
Well, and it's apparent how you stand on this as well. And the video is hard to ignore when you see what happened. But
right. But
I do think Howie Lake should not be paired with Salamone. He acted totally different
right.
when it came to the actions of that night.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, and we'll see what happens, but appreciate you bringing this to our attention. Jennifer Carwile and Abel Thompson of Together Baton Rouge. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Until tomorrow, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.